Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. How to maximize AI at the office. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is January 8th. I'm Rebecca. We continue our article about using AI agents at work. The title of our article is Your New Workforce. I'd like to welcome Peter back to the program.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, everyone. Good to be back.
Peter, it's great to have you on our program. And today we'll continue our talk about AI agents. But before we go into that, I'd like to ask you, from yesterday, we had a lot of great words. We had a lot of concepts. What is one word or concept you'd like to go over?
Well, just we touched on it right at the very end yesterday, but because it's in the very end of yesterday's article, this idea of how using AI agents in the workforce, the benefit is mainly that they can be assigned to do repetitive manual tasks that humans can do, but which doesn't really engage them fully in their work because they're so simple or they're so repetitive. You give that to AI, and then, as the article puts it, as a result, this unlocks not just efficiency, but also engagement. And it goes on to say, this is the last sentence of yesterday's article, in a world where innovation is a differentiator, someone that makes a difference, a differentiator, in a world where innovation is a differentiator, enabling people to do what only people can do becomes a strategic advantage. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't come from a business background. I come from a theater background, and we tend not to think in terms of strategic advantages. We tend to think practically. We tend to think, is this choice we're making serving the artistic point that we're trying to make? Does this make for a better show, basically? But and so obviously we want to be engaged in our work as artists, and if you are involved in artistic work of any kind, really, you'll find it very engaging. Because it is such a fundamentally human thing, whether you're painting a picture or composing music or acting in a play. But the idea of how this engagement that I previously had found so much in the world of theater can also apply to the business world so that it becomes a strategic advantage for your business, for making more money, for producing more products, for being more efficient, because people are more engaged in the work they have to do because AI is taking care of the boring work, the repetitive work that people had to do because someone had to do it, but not anymore. And so now, just this whole idea of being engaged in your work, mm-hmm. being a strategic advantage, is a perspective that I'd never really had before on, there's this expression, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And that's sort of another way of just talking about engagement here. And I'm appreciating how it also has a benefit outside of the theater world and outside of arts. It has a benefit in the business world.
That's a really good point. People who are engaged, people who like what they do, will do a better job. But the honest truth is most of us have parts of our work that we really don't like.
Right.
Like nobody likes all of their work. Right. Or maybe there are a few lucky few. If you're one of those lucky few, God bless you. That's wonderful. Yes. Yeah. Wonderful.
Tell us your secret.
Tell us your secret. How are you able to do that job that you love 24/7? That is a question. Well, one word I wanted to go over that we didn't have a chance yesterday to quite talk about is at the very end of day one, we talk about in a world where innovation is a differentiator. What is something that is a differentiator is something that makes you different from all the other similar products or similar offerings on the market. So something that differentiates you is something that sets you apart, that makes you different. And I think that's a really wonderful word in when we were talking about marketing, talking about rolling out new products. Differentiation, being different, is really, really important. You can't be exactly the same as everybody else. Like if we roll out a new course, like we roll out a new online course or in-person course, the question I often ask our colleagues, how is this different from all the other offerings on the market? If it's the same, let's not do it unless we can do it a lot better than everybody else. If we can't do it better and it's not different, it's better not to touch it. So that is the word differentiator. Differentiator is the noun form of differentiate. Differentiate just means to be different because of some quality, something you have that make you different from many similar things. That's a great word to learn. Well, let's continue day two. So first, let's get into our first reading where we'll talk about how sometimes people use AI incorrectly at work.
A common mistake. There is, however, one common mistake I see many organizations making. They are applying AI agents to outdated processes, hoping to speed them up. But efficiency is not the same as transformation. If you automate a broken process, you only get broken results faster. The real opportunity is not in acceleration, it's in reinvention. This moment calls for a process-first mindset. It's advisable to step back and ask ourselves the fundamental question. If we were designing the workflow today, knowing we had AI agents on our team from day one, how would we build it?
Peter, there is a common mistake that many companies make when they start to onboard these AI agents. What is the mistake that we see here?
Yeah, no, it's a very good insight, I think. The common mistake is to apply these AI agents, to use them for outdated processes in the hopes that they will just add speed to the processes. But, as the author says, efficiency, greater speed, is not the same as transformation, as changing something into something else completely. If you automate a broken process, you only get broken results faster. So there's an English expression, garbage in, garbage out.
Yes.
And if you don't want garbage to come out, you got to not put garbage in. You've got to change the machine. You've got to change the input. And that's sort of what is being said here, that if we apply AI agents, these digital robots, to processes that are outdated to begin with, then they'll just give us this imperfect results quicker, but not in a transformative way, not in a way that really improves the product or changes the whole way that we approach the situation.
Yes. And so we go on to say the real opportunity is not in acceleration. It is in reinvention. So if something is being accelerated, the verb, or acceleration, the noun, it just means a process where everything happens faster and faster, right? Like, for example, when you start a car, for the sports cars, they're always asking, how can you accelerate the car?
Right.
Like, how can you go faster?
Right.
Can you go from zero to 100 miles per hour? Like, if you are a Ferrari, maybe you can do it in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the acceleration, to go faster and faster. And it is really tempting because a lot of times when we use AI tools, like, for example, ChatGPT, we're just trying to speed up the process.
Right.
Like, how do I speed it up? So I don't have to spend 2 hours on this translation project. I can do it in like 20 minutes.
Right. And you can understand the impulse there because we're familiar with the process we've been using.
Yes.
And so, you know, without having to think about it too much, we think, okay, well, can we just make this process faster, get the results more quickly? But the author is saying, yeah, but if you don't think about the nature of the process that you're trying to speed up in the first place, then this will just, again, get you broken results or imperfect results faster. You won't get transformative results. You won't get results that really kind of take you to the next level.
Yes. So the author is suggesting that when we start to incorporate AI agents, before we put them in the process, we need to think about our process and see, is it broken? Or is there a lot of problems with it that we should redesign before we get the AI agent in the process? And that's a really good point. And I kind of think of, Peter, perhaps in your career, you've also done something just to speed things up. I remember as a young teacher, when I was first starting out here, starting out in Studio Classroom, there was one time I needed to teach a class where the material I need to teach is very specific.
Hmm.
It's supposed to be very, very niche. But my thought was, I need to use videos that Studio Classroom has already created. So I went back into our database, into our archive, and then I tried to find similar topics to what I was supposed to teach. Because I thought, well, the video's already there. The videos are there. And then so that material would be easy to use. We can use our own videos, and we'll design the handouts, design the lesson all around those videos. But the problem was, the videos, none of their topics were niche enough. They were not the specific topic I needed to teach this group of students. So it was really awkward. Like, it was not a good class. And then I learned later that sometimes we just have to get rid of everything we have and start from scratch.
Right.
Especially when we're doing niche things. Like, if you're, for example, if you're teaching a group of pilots about, you know, like about things they need to, like the English they need to learn when they are in an aircraft. That's very different from teaching like business people, like how to do office talk.
Right,
it's very,
right.
very different. So in the old days, I would just try to find something in our database and just try to change it, tweak it a little bit, and then try to force feed. I would tell that group, this is really, really important English you need to know. It's office English. You got to learn it. And now, as a more mature teacher with more years of experience and also just wisdom, hopefully, of age, then you understand we can't always use what's there. A lot of times we need to create new things, and we can't be afraid of the time we have to spend.
Right. No, that's a perfect example, because in reusing the older material, that helped you get your job done more quickly.
Yes.
But it produced a less satisfactory result.
Exactly. So the temptation to do things just to speed things up, it's really there.
Yeah.
And this is a really good point. I think it's probably the most important point from this article is, we got to think of how do we make the process better, not just faster.
Right.
So we have to look at not just efficiency. What's the other word that's close to efficiency, but it's not efficiency?
Oh, yeah. The word that's close to efficiency, but it's not efficiency, is engagement.
Yes. Engagement. How to be more engaged, the other E word, how to get better engagement, and also effective. That was the word
effective.
I'm searching for. The two E words that are similar but not really.
Right.
So if you're effective, it means that you're doing whatever you're doing well to reach your target. So we can be efficient and ineffective.
Yeah.
But we want to be efficient, but even more important, we want to be effective.
Right.
Because we want our work to make impact.
Yeah.
That's really important. Friends, we need to move on to our second reading, and we'll be talking about some of the ways AI agents are already improving work life.
Sales, customer service, and operations. In sales, AI agents can now qualify leads in real time, orchestrate outreach based on behavioral signals, and surface personalized insights for sales reps at the exact right moment. This creates a rhythm where reps focus less on handoffs and more on outcomes. In customer service, we're seeing companies move beyond bots and into intelligent agent networks that proactively resolve issues, understand sentiment, and escalate complex problems with full context. The experience is faster, more empathetic, and more efficient. In operations, AI agents are making proactive decisions by managing supply chain variables, predicting demand shifts, and optimizing resources in ways that used to require layers of manual coordination. These aren't hypothetical scenarios. They're real, and they're redefining how companies deliver value. This is where the most exciting breakthroughs will happen. Not because we used AI to do what we already do faster, but because we gave ourselves permission to reimagine how the work could be done better. This transformation doesn't start with technology, it starts with mindset. It starts with a CEO who understands that the future of the workforce is collaborative, intelligent, and profoundly human in its ambition. The future won't be fully human, but it will be more human-centered. it will be defined by those willing to lead with purpose, with courage, and with a commitment to building something better for both people and machines.
Peter, let's talk about some of the ways AI agents are already improving our workflow. So there's a couple different areas that we need to get into. So let's start with sales.
Sales, good old sales. Yes,
sales is important. Sales help us make the money. So I'm always very respectful of our salespeople.
Absolutely.
If they don't do a good job, we will be all out of jobs.
Right, right. And what AI can do, AI agents can do in sales is qualify leads in real time, you know, determine whether this is a lead worth pursuing, how fruitful it's going to be. They can orchestrate outreach based on behavioral signals. And like I say, I don't have a business background, so I know these words, but not completely their use in a business context. So you can help me out with that, Rebecca, as we go. But orchestrate, to orchestrate something, as you might guess, it's like an orchestra, a symphony orchestra, where you have the violins and the trumpets and the kettle drums, and the conductor needs to orchestrate all the elements of the orchestra together. It means to arrange, to manage and arrange something. And in this case, it's managing and arranging outreach, customer outreach, based on behavioral signals. I assume that means based on certain signals or evidences that customers or leads may give as to how open they are to buying the product or expressing interest in it, that sort of thing. And then finally, in sales, AI can surface personalized insights for sales reps at the exact right moment. Interesting use of the word surface there. Normally we hear that just in the noun form, the surface of something, like, you know, our skin is the surface of the body. But to surface something means to bring it to light, sort of to bring it up from underneath, to reveal it. And so AI can surface, in this sense, can reveal personalized insights for sales reps at the exact right moment.
Yeah, very good. Just one thing I wanted to talk a little bit about is to qualify the leads. And just like Peter said, the leads are basically the potential customers. And a lot of times, for example, perhaps some of you go to trade shows, you have a booth, and there are a lot of people walk into your booth, and then they leave their business card, and they say, can you give me more information? So these are all leads. They're not your customers just yet. They're potential customers. And then we have to shift through these stacks of business cards in the old days. Perhaps nowadays we don't use business cards as much. Perhaps we just get people's email or info. And then we have to look at the behavioral signals. Like, how are people behaving? Like, when you send them an email, do they quickly write back? Like, are they interested in following up with you? Or they just gave you a business card and never talked to you again?
Yeah.
So these are all things that salespeople have to decide every day. Like, is that potential customer serious? Is this lead going to lead anywhere? Why is it called a lead? Because a lead means there's a potential to go somewhere. But it also has a potential to not go anywhere. So that's a lead. So in sales, like, this could be very helpful, because when you have all this information and you can track it, then it can help us make decisions much faster. But then let's move on to another area. Let's talk about customer service. How does AI help customer service?
Right. Well, in customer service, as it says here, we're seeing companies move beyond bots, probably meaning chat bots in this case, or possibly robots originally, where the word chatbot comes from. But we're seeing companies move beyond bots and into intelligent agent networks, the AI agents that we've been talking about all this time, that proactively resolve issues, understand sentiment, and escalate complex problems with full context. Proactively, it does all this, meaning it does not wait for something to happen. It takes the initiative. It is proactive in resolving issues, understanding sentiment, which is an interesting word, because sentiment, basically another word for emotions, for feeling. So to understand sentiment means to sort of combine the head with the heart in understanding what's going, getting a complete picture of what's going on with the customer, and escalate here. Again, another slightly different use of the word here, but an important one. It will escalate complex problems. That does not mean it will make them more of a problem. It does not mean it will make make them a bigger problem. In a business context, as I understand it, to escalate something means to take the issue to the higher level of management,
yes,
where it can be more effectively dealt with rather than just the operator that the person's talking to on the phone, to move it up the chain in,
yes,
the hierarchy so that it can get a better response, not to escalate it, like, you know, to escalate a conflict, to make it more problematic and more conflictive.
Exactly. Escalate, take it to a higher level, take it to the manager, and then if the manager can't solve it, we escalate it up to the boss. We let the higher ups make the decision for us when it's very complicated. And then also now in operations, this is to day-to-day running of the company. We also have AI agents. They're making proactive decisions. And some of the things that they do is they can manage the supply chain. Variables. Variables is a great word. I think of my days, you know, when I was in university, my first degree was in microbiology.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a long way from English, huh? But okay, microbiology. We are always changing variables. So the variable in an experiment is something that can be different in different situations, right?
Right.
Like it's like one factor out of the many factors. Perhaps it's the temperature, like when you're in a lab. It's like when you're growing bacteria, the different temperatures will cause bacteria to grow at a different rate.
Right.
So
right,
that one variable is temperature.
Right.
Another variable perhaps is basically how much food did you put for the bacteria?
Mm-hmm.
Food is not really the right word, but I'm trying to imply like it's just different factors that can impact how much bacteria grow in your plate.
Right.
Your agar plate.
Or in basic algebra, right? A squared plus B squared equals C squared. A, B, and C are called variables because,
yes,
they could be any amount. So,
yes,
we just put a letter in to stand for the actual number, and that's a variable.
Yes. And in operations here, we're also talking about how do we optimize resources. And when I thought about optimize just to mean keep improving it so it's the best, I thought of the Transformers movie. Peter,
Optimus,
you know who I'm
Prime
talking about, right?
Optimus Prime.
Optimus Prime is the big one, right?
Like he's the big good guy.
He's the big good guy.
Yeah.
He's like the head of the good guys.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, Optimus, great word. If you want to call yourself Optimus,
yeah,
that could be a good nickname.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make for a good English name. It'll be confusing, but it makes for a good nickname. So to optimize something just means to keep improving something so that it's very, 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 very good. It's as good as possible. Optimize results, yes.
Right.
And then we go on another word. These are not hypothetical scenarios. Hypothetical.
Yeah, hypothetical.
Peter, do you like hypothetical situations?
Oh, I like talking about hypothetical situations because that's all you can do with
right,
a hypothetical situation. It's a situation that does not necessarily exist, usually does not exist, but you talk about it in case it does exist someday. You know, in, you know, a hypothetical situation, I run out of gas in my car and I'm nowhere near a gas station. What do I do? Hypothetical situation. Hopefully it never happens, but it's worth thinking about so that I have a plan in case it ever does happen.
So these are things that have not happened yet. These are situations that are not real, but there's a possibility they can happen, right? So these are hypotheticals. And then there are many exciting potential breakthroughs. But when we're thinking of, you know, incorporating more AI, incorporating more machines, incorporating more software into our processes, it's really, really important that we have to understand that they, like, humans will always be an important part of this process. Like, we can't outsource everything to the machines. Like, we need to collaborate together with the machines.
Right, right. There's a great line here in the second to last paragraph, the
yeah,
first sentence. This transformation doesn't start with technology. It starts with mindset. And that's the point that the author has really been making throughout day two of the article here, is that we don't want to just use this amazing AI technology to get broken results more quickly. We
yes,
want to fix the whole system. We want to transform it. And that isn't something... It's something that we use technology for, but it doesn't start with technology. It starts with mindset. It starts with thinking, with vision, with reimagining, reinventing situations, and then applying the technology to it to increase, to maximize efficiency and effectiveness.
Yes. And so it's explaining to us that the CEO, the top management, they need to understand that the future of the work is collaborative, intelligent. And what's really important is actually the last part, profoundly human in its ambition.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, what is Author getting to? Profoundly human in its ambition. So we're using a lot more machines. We're using less humans. We're using more machines. And a lot of people lose their jobs in the process. But how can you be profoundly human in ambition?
I think that's really the only way you can be ambitious, because ambition is a human quality, to strive for more, to desire to reach a goal, to raise yourself to a level that you are not currently at. That is a largely human thing, to be ambitious. And so this transformation that the author is talking about, I think she describes it well here, where she's talking about the transformation of the workforce. It is collaborative, intelligent, and profoundly human in its ambition, because only humans can learn, can yearn for more, can desire more. A machine can be more effective, more efficient than a human being, but it has no heart, it has no soul. It can't desire something greater than what it has. It can only seek to do something that the human told it to do better than the human can do it. But a machine can't dream. A machine can't yearn, can't hope, can't long for something. A machine can't be ambitious.
So we need to keep the dreaming. We need to keep the heart, right? Like,
right.
And using all these digital digital tools, we cannot lose heart. We cannot lose the human heart. And the last paragraph we have, the future won't be fully human, but it will be more human-centered. Now, human-centered means that we keep the human at the center.
Yeah.
Like, we don't lose track of human needs. Like, what do people need? We're focusing on the needs of humans. What makes people more holistically well, well, you know, mentally, spiritually, physically. We can't lose track of that, because sometimes in the pursuit of speed, like you said, the pursuit of speed, the pursuit of efficiency, we lose heart. We lose the heart. And once a company, it loses its need to serve people's needs, then you really lose your way.
I remember there was an ad maybe about 20 years ago for the latest cell phone technology, or maybe right at the beginning of smartphone technologies, when we were getting those phones that you could also type messages on. And the ad, the visual of the ad, was this normal guy in an office setting typing a message really quickly on his phone, and he begins to turn into a robot as he's doing it, because the phone enables him to be so efficient that it's almost like he's not even a human being anymore. He's a machine typing and sending these text messages and getting all this work done and being so productive. But at the same time, is he still human if he's turning into a machine? Sure, he's efficient, great, wonderful, but there's more to life than speed.
Yes, let's stay human. Let's
Absolutely.
Never lose our humanness.
I think the author is doing a little bit of preaching here right at the end, and maybe in a good sense, saying that the future won't be fully human, but it will be more human-centered. That's a good closing line there.
Yes, this is a very good close. So friends, let's never lose our humanity as we use more of these tech tools. Let's not lose our humanity. Let's not lose what makes us human. And on that note, we need to end today's program. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.